That's probably not the greatest idea in the world to start testing a new mic straight away like this without a test.
John, just while you're testing out your mic, and just for the benefit of anyone listening, what we're looking at today is for anyone to phone in. It's kind of phone-in format tonight, so anybody can phone in with anything they want to talk about to do with education. You may, of course, want to talk about the big matter today of the public sector strike. So you, if you were involved tonight, you might want to give us your opinion or your reflections on how the day went for you and how you saw other people experiencing it. So there's three ways to get in touch with Radio EduTalk. First of all, I'd be delighted if you phoned up and came on live to talk, and the phone number to bring you through to our virtual studio, so to speak, is 0131 208 1084. That's 0131 208 1084, and we'll be asking listeners to consider phoning in about 5 or 10 minutes time, not at this moment in time, but you can also email the show at edutalker, that's edutalkr at hotmail.co.uk, and you can also send a message on Twitter to at edutalker, that's edutalkr, or you can post a message on Twitter using the hashtag edutalk. John, how are you getting on?
I'm getting on fine. That's coming through loud and clear. Not sure if anybody's listening. I popped out a wee tweet with the phone number in it so that folk can give us a phone. I guess I was out on strike today. For where I work, there's only three people in my team and two of us are in the union, but we didn't really pay a whole lot of attention, I don't think, or get ourselves organised. But we did... we did go out today, but we didn't participate any further than that, I don't think. I saw quite a lot of tweets. Did you catch the hashtag today, David?
I'd used the in the kind of lead up to tonight's show, I'd used the hashtag, the one that I used was hashtag 30Nov, which I'd kind of picked up during the week checking a couple of public sector trades union websites, but as it kind of got closer to today, there seemed to be some alternative hashtags. I think there was a N30 and I think there was a couple of others, so and I've been busy all day, and I'll tell you why in a moment, but what were the kind of prominent hashtags and what were you picking up from the comments online today, John?
What was the N30 one, I noticed, and I must say I was pleasantly surprised the number of people that seemed to be out and about on the street in Edinburgh, Dundee, Falkirk. So tweets from all these places, people out. I even saw Jonesy Boy tweeting he was leaving the picket line to head for Edinburgh. So it's did seem, and watching the news and stuff, it really did seem to, in Scotland at least, have a big participant, a lot of folk.
And John, when you were saying you were kind of out and about today, did you bump into school based teachers and other members of teaching trade unions? Catch up with it?
I wasn't out at all, really. I just keep my head down in the house. I was on Twitter, which is probably not a big deal, but I say I did keep up with quite a lot of tweets for a while. I would say all the ones I saw were very positive towards the strike and the idea of what was doing. I also very much enjoyed the Guardian this morning. It had a lot of good sort of link ups between the march and the budget yesterday, which I think kind of dotted the I's and crossed the T's. The fact is, it seems to be necessary.
Well, it was certainly a kind of curious situation for myself, and one that I've been very busy working on over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I have been a trade unionist for many years, and I am a trade union or the representative for the major trade union in Scotland and the majority trade union among our staff in my school. And I faced a difficult situation because, as yourself and maybe anyone that's listening out there, some listeners might know, I work in a residential school for children, you know, teenage boys who are looked after and accommodated. So we're a 24/7, 365 establishment. It can be a place where high supervision, or it is a place where high supervision is vital at all times. For a number of reasons, and so we actually ended up in conjunction with the teaching staff and the wider education staff and the management and the ownership of the school, the owners of the school, we actually ended up applying to the trade union in question for an exemption on health and safety grounds, because if the teaching staff were on strike, then there would need to be a fairly significant amount of overtime carried out by non-teaching staff to supervise and engage the young people during the school day, because there was no option, they would have a school day no matter what. We applied for the exemption, and we were granted that exemption. So myself and my teaching colleagues, although we had taken part in the ballot and you know, we'd engaged with all the kind of discussion and planning for the strike, and we were actually granted an exemption, so we were all at work today. And so there's been a few kind of issues getting played about in my mind since we were granted the exemption, and also today, looking at the fantastic turnout in the streets of Scotland, and with it being a residential school in the private sector, you know, we have concerns about what's going to happen in the long run. We're all affected by the proposed changes, and there is certainly a fear with the Hutton report. I think it's squeezed in at the very bottom, the proposal that those who are working in private sector educational establishments should be removed from the public sector pension scheme, and that's one that the small number of teachers in Scotland too who work for private establishments are going to have to wrestle with at a time in the future, after we deal with the kind of big pension issues at the moment. But that's all I'll say, because it's not about me, it's not about anybody in particular. So it'll be interesting for to hear from other people, listeners, on their experiences today and their thoughts on the industrial dispute in a wider sense.
Yep, I would just remind, if anybody's listening, if you phone in 0131 208 1084, one of the things I find quite strange, I mean, recently I've been working, say, in a very small group of people, I'm not in a school anymore, and I also, day to day at the moment, we're out in different schools all the time, and I haven't really been talking to my colleagues, and this has just drifted up to me. I've been paying more attention to mainstream media than I have to sort of local conversations, and it just got to the point where the strike arrived, and I say I hadn't discussed it with my colleagues. I didn't even find out, except via email, that their building was closed, and there was alternative arrangements for those who work, the people that weren't in the union. So it's been a sort of strange experience. I've been teaching for quite a long time, and I can't remember a previous industrial action. I actually got to the point where we went on strike, and always had a staff room full of colleagues to discuss things with.
I just wonder at this point, John, if we maybe throw the phone line open and see if anybody wants to to ring in. I'm sure there's lots of people online tonight who might be willing to share their thoughts. I'll just kind of go through the processes or the options, and then we'll see if anyone rings in. It'd be great to hear from trade unionists or prominent trade unionists if they're listening in tonight. What we'd be looking for is one person at a time, because we don't have a big switchboard or anything like that. So we'd be looking for, I suppose, from this point, for the next few moments, if somebody would like to call in and share their thoughts and experiences on strike day. The number to dial, it's a national rate number, so if you've got 3 minutes on your phone, that applies. If not, then the call is just charged at national rate, and the telephone number is 0131 208 1084. That's 0131 208 1084, and you can email the show at edutalker, that's edutalkr at hotmail.co.uk, or you can put a message on Twitter using the hashtag edutalk, and John and I will be able to pick up your comments. So it'd be great at this point. I think we'll maybe just go quiet for a minute or two, John. If anybody would like to call in, it's 0131 208 1084. Okay, John, well, we don't have anybody calling in at the moment. That's no problem at all. I understand that you've got a little bit of audio that was recorded for the EduTalk project earlier on in the week, just to kind of put folk in the picture. The EduTalk project has been running for a couple of years, and it encourages people to use mobile and other devices to record and share audio through a single site, that being edutalk.cc, and we've had many audio contributions over the last few months, so people can use their mobile phone to record a voice message, a voice memo, and then they can email it to EduTalk, or some people use applications such as AudioBoo and iPadio just to capture or stream audio live on their phone, which can then be recorded and uploaded. So there are a couple of other ways as well that people can contribute something to the site, and we have a number of kind of regular contributors, and I think you've got one queued up at the moment, and this relates to, I suppose, an atypical opinion around the strike action today, and it might be interesting to share that just now and see if that sparks off any comments from listeners, either during the live stream tonight, Wednesday night, or for anybody who listens in subsequently. So what we'll do is we'll play this piece of audio and see if anybody, including yourself, John, I suppose, or myself, want to make a comment on it.
Okay,
and then we'll go back to the phone line again to see if anyone wants to call in light of this contribution or this viewpoint, and then we'll maybe move on to a couple of other topics that have been around this week.
Okay, this is an Audio Boo contributed to Edgy Talk by Richard, who's recently popped quite a lot of interesting stuff into Audio Boo.
Hi, it's Richard. Thanks for listening to this Audio Boo. The winds of change are blowing, it seems. Wednesday of this week, a substantial number of people will be going on strike because they've been told by the trade union Congress and the constituent unions that it's a good idea to do that because we're striking back about the unfairness of our pension changes that are being foisted upon us by an ungrateful government. And it's not our fault that the government has wasted so much money over the years. Why should we have to pay for this? Well, take a look around you. I wonder if people have noticed that 60 is the new 40. That in the last few decades, people have started to get healthier and stronger and live longer. And when they do that, they take their pensions for longer. And enjoy them, quite rightly so. The problem with that, of course, is that the financial model upon which that is based doesn't work. Our financial deficit is massive in this country. It's substantially larger than it should be. We're having to do something about that. Labour government and the Conservatives before them have been overspending for many, many years in the UK, as they have in many of the Western countries around the world, who have enjoyed post-war freedoms and an increase in leisure time and all the things that were promised to us in the 50s and 60s that brought us now to this time of leisure and pleasure that we have. We've become fat and lazy. Our working time is reducing substantially. Do a quick Google on the web, you'll see that there's a massive decline in the average working week in the Western countries. Compared to those countries who are in the growing economies like China and India and Brazil, have a look around you in the world and see where these economies are going. See if you can't extrapolate that a little. And ask yourself, is it reasonable? Is it reasonable that you can strike against these financial changes taking place in the world today? Or is it more reasonable that you roll your sleeves up and get on with the jobs that you're paid to do? And B, public servants, that which you have signed up to be by taking a job in the public sector, serve the public, take the money, and do the job the best you can. This is what I would expect of public servants. When I was a public servant in the military, that's what we did. Today's military is no different. It serves, it does the job it's paid to do, and it doesn't whinge or worry about the consequences or other people's responsibilities or irresponsibilities that have caused their problems. They just do. This is the role of public servant. And anybody who is a public servant should do that. And if you don't like it, don't be a public servant. Go and work in private sector. Go and set up your own business. See how easy it is. See how easy it is when you're sitting there with clients that owe you money, that are taking advantage of your credit terms and extending their own credit, wrecking your cash flow, giving you the stress and uncertainty that business has. Take the risk. Go and stand on your own 2 feet. See what it feels like to be on the outside of the comfort zone of public sector. I think you'll find that you should, if you properly reflect upon this, be embarrassed at the thought of taking a day on Wednesday to strike against public service. I don't think you should. I will be at work on Wednesday, so will many other people. Why don't you join us? Thanks for listening.
Okay, so that was Nick. Is there anybody on the lines at all, David?
No, we've not got anybody in yet, so I'll just say it. Can you hear me okay, by the way, because I had a little bit of a message popping up on Skype. Is the audio fine?
Yep, I can hear you okay. Both on Skype on my Mac and on the live stream as well.
Okie dokie, right. So just in light of, was it Richard?
Yeah,
Richard's audio. Then you might want to phone in with a comment on what you've just heard, and the number is 01312 10.84, and that's charged at national rate. So again, we'll just give folk a couple of minutes to see if anyone's listening to the live stream and would like to call in with a comment. If you're listening to the recording of this show, then you can leave a comment at the bottom of the recording at edutalk.cc or at the Radio Edutalk webpage. You can also go to this particular I suppose snippet of audio on its own particular post on the Edutalk website. So if you just go to edutalk.cc, you'll easily be able to find the audio that you've just listened to. You can listen to it again, you can leave a comment, get a discussion started that way outside of the live show. So we'll just see if anybody wants to call in at the moment to pick up on what Richard had to say. And the telephone number again is 0131 208 1084.
I noticed myself when I was listening to that just after I published it that it seemed almost designed to goad me into anger. I haven't been out walking today, I've just been all doing strike. But if I was trying to decide whether to go out when I heard that, I would have definitely gone down out on strike. There's a couple, I think, interesting red herrings he's putting out there. One is this idea that we're all in, that the whole country's in real trouble and we're all in it together and we've all got to help. And if you just looked at the budget yesterday and most of the other things, I don't see a lot of the top percentage of best well-off people in the country really suffering yet. And it's the idea that we're all getting a wee cut. Well, a wee cut doesn't make a big difference if you're sitting at the top. It does if you're working as a part-time cleaner in a local authority. The other that is if you were striking, you were striking against public service. I think for a start, he's maybe got a really old-fashioned idea of what a servant is. I don't know if Richard doffs his cap when the public or his bosses are there, but it sounds like a slightly different relationship, working relationship than I'd expect as a public servant.
I think I was quite shocked when I heard it for the first time last week, but it kind of fits in with the behaviour of those who are anti-strike. So I think that it kind of it's fitted in with some of the things that have come out of the coalition, some of the statements that have come out of the coalition government in the last week or so, and it's quite provocative. I think kind of making it very a kind of clear split, sort of black and white or left wing, right wing. And I think it was I think there were red herrings in there. I think also to me, you know, to trying to be objective with what Richard had to say, I think when you it was a kind of particular version of public service I think he was kind of drawing on, which I find quite interesting for other folk to kind of pick up. I think he was coming from more from the point of view of the military and the police, for example, and their history of not striking, that you don't think about it, you choose to do that job. It's that part of that's public service, and you know, there'll be mechanisms for negotiating, but it's never done under the threat of strike action, and that's not the way it's been with other professions or semi-professions or former vocations in the public sector. And I think partly that's because, you know, your teaching and your social work and certain professions within health tend to have historically, or certainly since the 50s, have been more likely to stand up against those in power or the politicians are the paymasters, and there's something I think quite seductive about that, because these are then you query, do they act like that out of self-interest, or do they act like that out of also a kind of interest for the well-being of their clients or patients or pupils? The idea that they're maybe, if we come right up to the modern day, that our pupils and the families of our pupils are maybe suffering in some way as well, and that is there a kind of activist or almost political angle to some of the work that teachers do? And I know that's certainly never talked about, but in the past, teachers were fairly political with a capital P. I don't think Richard likes that, and I think he would prefer that teachers and other associated professions were more, stoic or disciplined in one sense, like the military and like the police.
And the other kind of slightly odd point is that if we did sign up for something, what we signed up for was a particular pay system and pension scheme, and what they're actually doing is changing that mid course. And maybe it is going to be necessary, but to change it, we need to have a long discussion where there's some sort of give and take, rather than what seems to be an imposition.
I think, John, that also comes back to how how pensions are actually treated or how they're conceived of, in legal and financial terms, but also by the people who are buying or paying in or contributing to pension pots. I mean, when I was growing up, my family would always emphasise the fact that your pension contribution or your pension is deferred pay, which isn't really spoken about these days. That it's part of your pay, which is deferred to when you retire. So I think that kind of ties in with what you're talking about there, John. That they're taking money that actually is ours, and an agreement that was signed up to, and contributions that were paid in good faith for. Set established or written down benefits at a future time, and how can that be changed? And just that idea that I think a few years ago there were changes that were made, but it was to new entrants to the profession, so that people knew the changes when they entered the pension scheme for the first time. But yeah, these are mid-course massive changes that have been made to people who have been paying in for some time. And of course the argument would be, well, it's only applies to the years and the contributions from a certain date in the future forward, people entered in good faith and entered with a particular set of agreements for payments and contributions and future benefits at a particular moment in time.
I'm not sure we're going to get much input tonight. Maybe everybody's really tired, or maybe they've all gone to the pub to warm up after being cold. I don't know.
Well, John, I think we'll say maybe for the final time, if anybody wants to, anyone listening to a live stream would like to call in with your thoughts or experiences on today's strike day, then if you call 0131 208 1084, that's 0131 208 1084, where you can send an email to edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or put a comment on Twitter using the hashtag edutalk. And if you're listening to a recording of this show, then the latter two ways of getting in touch with the show would allow you to make comments on anything you've heard tonight, or any comments about edutalk, or any thoughts about how shows should be structured in the future, or a kind of future focus, or people you would like to see being interviewed, or discussions being had with on the live show. So you can send a tweet or an email at any time. And when we're live, and when it's not the archives that have been played on Radio Edge Talk, when we're live around about 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock on a Wednesday night, then you can call the number that I've just read out, and you can be live on air. So let's just ask for the final time if anyone wants to call in their thoughts and experiences on Strike Day today. But also if anybody's got anything to share, any events that are coming up, anything that's been happening in your professional life or in your particular classroom over the last week, then you can just get in touch by dialing 01312081084. We're just coming into the last 10 minutes or so of the show, so we can move away from the strike if people want to phone in and talk about something else.
Is there anything else that's caught your attention recently, David, or less than the last week?
No, I've been starting to think ahead to the new year. Obviously, it's going to start getting a little bit quiet, maybe online or just work-wise, I suppose, starting to wind down maybe in a fortnight's time. But still lots to do. But at the same time, I like to look forward to the new year and a couple of projects to focus on. I'm going to have a lot of work to do around the doctorate, and certainly in the next 5 or 6 weeks I've got a conference to organise with the committee of the Association of Chartered Teachers. So we are working towards the conference, which is on Saturday the 4th of February. So we've got lots of things to do around trying to putting out a call for contributions, you know, trying to get people putting forward workshop ideas, identifying keynote speakers. So it's that time of year. This will be the third ACTS National Annual Conference, and it's exciting, but for obvious reasons, for those of you who know about the Chartered Teacher Scheme, the conference hasn't been a focus in recent months. And now it has to be, because we're very proud of the event that we put on every February. And I'm also working, starting to think about a technologies for learning conference around the start of June. I've managed to get a couple of kind of big players on board to try and get something set up. So I'm really, really excited that that would be a one-day conference at the start of June. And it will be done through a couple of professional organisations or event organisers working together to put something together that hopefully will appeal to people right across Scottish education. And I get a lot of satisfaction out of working with, you know, kind of coalition or cooperating with people that I don't work on a day-to-day basis with, you know, to try and set up standalone events that hopefully spark other things off. So that's something that I need to start moving on, because I think you typically need around about 6 months to organise a conference or day events. What about yourself, John? Anything on the horizon, or anything particularly techy that you've been working on that you could
maybe
understand?
I'm just in a minute. Oh, we've got, there's Ian Hallahan. Is Don underscore Ian. If you can pull him in via Skype, he's going to.
Okay, that would be great. And as we've said before, Ian Hallahan's a teacher of additional support needs who's based in Glasgow. So are you saying, John, that it looks like that Ian would like to.
Yeah, I think he wants to put in his tuppence worth. He's just come in line, he's just tweeted, "Do you take Skypers?" And of course we do.
Okay, and now I'm frantically trying to see whether I have Ian in my contact list for Skype, and I don't think I do.
It's Don, so, D-O-N underscore I-A-I-N.
Okay, right, that'll just take me a minute or so, John, okay. So if you just want to talk about what you were going to say there.
Well, the other thing that's been catching my attention before I start thinking about the strikes was the @EduScotICT or #EduScotICT. After the October conference, everything seemed to go quite quiet. My main reading recently has been Jim Buchan's blog, RurikOnline.org.uk/blog, who has been powering a great set of posts that have really dug into what he thinks, and I pretty much agree all the way, what we're looking for from the new glow or whatever. And he's got a much deeper and wider understanding of these things than most people, I think. I've said before, I can see the front end stuff, I can understand that, but it's all the back end and bandwidth and user accounts and all the rest of it. He's been thinking about that, and I really hope that somebody in the government's been paying some attention to that.
John, can you read out the URL for Jim's blog again?
It's www.ruacchonline.org.uk/blog, and I'll pop that in the show notes when we publish this podcast. And one of the things he was talking about is Olivia Weckelsen, who at the conference and at quite a few teach meets and other places recently has been talking about how she's using Glow in her classroom. And in a recent blog post, she was talking about the idea of moving to Edmondo, another online service, and that kind of chimed with a few tweets from Margaret Vass. And most people should know Margaret in Scottish education. She's probably our main primary blog person. She's pioneered all sorts of blogging and e-portfolios and wiki use by her press. And this year she'd moved to using Glowblogs, and just at the last week or so she's been converting some of her children's blogs to Primary Blogger. It's primaryblogger.co.uk, and she actually seemed to negotiate this with her children. She offered her children the chance to move, and the reason they're moving is that there's more flexibility with the Primary Blogger setup than there is with the Glow blogs. And I thought the timing of this is quite interesting. We're hopefully going to hear something from the government very soon about what's going to happen with EduScot ICT. But it looks like if they don't hurry up, some of the data practitioners and people that have been really pushing the Glow stuff will have moved elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep, so I'm just looking at Jim Buchan's blog at the moment. It's very interesting. He's writing extensively on Glow, and particularly looking towards the future and, for example, Edmodo, and how I suppose that might be there's aspects of the Edmodo model that might help to inform the next iteration of Glow. At this moment, what I'm going to do is Skype out to Ian Hallahan in Glasgow, who I'm going to ask as a first question how he experienced today. So, if I can remember how to do this, to try and pull Ian in, I think this should work fine. We're starting to get the hang of this, John. Yeah. So I'm just dialing out to Ian. You'll probably, if you're listening to live stream, you'll hear it ringing for a moment, and then we'll have Ian live. Are you there, Ian?
I'm just muting up my other line.
Fantastic, you're sounding really clear. Yep, so if you just mute everything else other than your Skype mic, then John should be able to pick it up, and you should be live on Radio EduTalk. So how's your day been, Ian?
That broke up a wee bit. What were you saying?
That was too good to be true. Ian, I'm just asking how your day went today with the strike and all that.
It didn't really make much difference to my day, I have to be honest with you. It's not what I was phoning for.
Ian, I'm sorry to put you on the spot like that. I know it's quite awkward, and it's I've explained at the top of the show how it's kind of special circumstances for myself as well, and I won't go over that again. But just one quick point I did make earlier on, though, Ian, is that, you know, I'll certainly be concerned that you know, there is the kind of comment that kind of snuck into the Hutton reports last year, suggesting that that private that pensions for teachers in the private sector should be decoupled from the public sector scheme. So I think that could be a biggie for those of us working in private schools. And let's be honest, Ian, we're not going to get 30,000 workers out in support for us if and when that happens. So there's a concern there. I think it's maybe too crude the way I'm painting it, but the fact that it appears that very, very few, for various reasons, very, very few teachers in the private sector were out on strike today, that could certainly bite us in the backside in the future. So I don't know if you've got a thought on that. It's just something that's been forefront in my mind in the last week or so. But if you don't have an opinion on that, then it'd be great to hear about what you called up about.
I never said I didn't have an opinion. I mean, I've always got an opinion. I think this is really just the thin end of the wedge, in both ways. I think this is the thin end of the wedge of where the government are going with that, and I think it's the thin end of the wedge of where the unions are going with it. You and I both went to school in the old Eastwood constituency, David. I'm sure you remember how things were when we were going through school, with teachers out almost every week. I don't know that it did much good then, and I don't know that insofar as getting anything done it would do much good now. I mean, everyone knows what the most effective path of industrial rule action would be for teachers, and the which would be a work to rule. I mean, if all the teachers were working to rule, the system would come crashing down. But as you know, nobody would do it. But to go on to what I phoned in for, last weekend I was up in Inverness for Teach Me Highland, amongst other things, and I thought it went really, really well. There was a good mix of folk there, and, you know, people from all over. I mean, the crew down from Thurso, and they were talking away, and it would take them longer to get home than it would take me to go back to Glasgow. And I was thinking, man, that's such commitment. And it all went really well. The presenters were really interesting. I thought there was something for everyone. All marshalled very, very efficiently and with a superb amount of effort by Dave Terran. But when I was talking to Dave, he seemed really disappointed. I think he was hoping that it had been bigger. I mean, there was about, I don't know, 20 folk there. And I think he was hoping it would have been bigger. And I mean, first of all, I just wanted to give him kind of a big thank you for organising it and doing so well. But secondly, I didn't want him thinking that it wasn't of any value. Sometimes you can get caught up a wee bit too much in comparing it to one of the big, like, Scottish Learning Festival teach meets or one of the big BET teach meets. And it's all about the connections. And I thought that the people who were there, all enthusiastic, all willing to contribute, and I thought what he managed to achieve was pretty special.
Yeah, I've been listening to it because I only heard a wee bit of it live on Flash Meeting due to family stuff and cooking dinner and the likes, but I pulled all the audio and ripped it the day after, and I've been cutting it up into chunks, and I'm going to push it out onto Edutalk. And you're dead right, there's great stuff there, Ian. And I think we've got to think of these meetings that 20 people is a pretty good number of people actually giving up a Friday evening to do something professional, and that if we can push it out through the media, then it will have hopefully an echo in various different places. One of the things I've been doing recently is, since we've set up this Radio Edutalk, is actually listening to it myself, and it, most of the time it's just doing random stuff, and I can be working away at something else or driving, and you just get wee bits and pieces, wee ideas. So I think what I'm hoping it will do is keep this stuff alive.
Ian, I, like a lot of the stuff that's online, it kind of passes you by, but there seemed to be a lot of activity around Teach Meat Highlands, and I thought at first it was similar to the Argyle Teach Meat last month, where I think that was done all online, is that right, or partly online? So I actually assumed that because of the distances involved, it was being done entirely virtually. So I'm just checking the wiki there, and that, as you say, it's quite incredible the distances that folk travelled, and for 20 people to turn up for a teach meet that time of the week in that geographical location, I think is excellent. And what kind of stands out for me is the breadth of topics that have been addressed, and I think I just kind of link it in with Radio Edutalk. I think it works quite well. I tweeted earlier on this morning about how I was doing some admin in the early hours, and although I can't always concentrate, I try just put both at the same time. I put Radio Edutalk on in the background, and it was a few of the presentations. Your one on visual stress, for example, and it's just fantastic for these events to take place and for people to record and rip a bit of audio from them, to share. And certainly, I mean, the way I come from, it kind of fits in with the ideas of, what do they call it, disruption and things like that, disruption using technologies, and just that notion that this kind of thing isn't happening. There is a gap. It's a type of activity or networking or whatever, professional learning, CPD, whatever you want to call it. It'll be different things to different people, but it isn't happening unless people like Dave Terran set this up. It's not going to happen otherwise. And that, well, he presto, when you actually do put a bit of effort in and set something up, people do come to it. And I think they're although I could talk all night about the issues that I've got with Teach Meet, with the model in general, not with the way that people are doing it in specific locations and at times. I think it's, there's been a lot of people talking in light of the kind of UK chat discussions and things like that about trusted spaces or trusted events and the knowledge that there's not a commercial angle or an ulterior motive. That's explicit. I think that Teach Meat has a brand that is all those things, and that people will continue to come. But I'm just wondering yourself, Ian, about what was it different from other Teach Meets in any way? I'm noting, for example, it's something I've been thinking quite a lot about. There doesn't appear to have been any sponsors whatsoever.
Well, the only cost was the venue, from what I could gather. Between Dave and Sinclair McKenzie, they cobbled together the whole tech side of things themselves. But there was, I think, the figure I've seen, I remember being mentioned, was £200 for the venue. Now, I'm assuming that when Dave went for that, that's when he was expecting more people. So that's possibly why he was willing to fork out that cash. Now, from what I can gather, he got that funded from a couple of different places, but not necessarily in a sponsorship kind of model. We'd probably need to ask him exactly how he went about twisting their arms. But I don't think, looking at the wiki, there's no mention of a sponsor anywhere. There was certainly no branding there and then at the event. He gave out a thanks to the people who had supported it, and that was really about it. And like you say, I mean, for it to be a Saturday, that amount of people coming from those amounts of distance, I just thought what they achieved was pretty amazing, and that they should be giving them a big slap, big clap in the back, rather than beating themselves up that there wasn't 154.
Well, as I say, I hope there's going to be hundreds of listeners eventually. Probably next week sometime, one of the hours in the week on Radio Edutalk, we'll just do a Teach Me Highland special and just stream that for an hour or so. Just noticing we had a couple of tweets aimed at us earlier on about the stuff we were talking about earlier. One from Heedy Bob, who says he wishes that his staff would work to rule, because he doesn't think they're actually doing bits and, you know, enough hours. And I tweeted back to him and said, yeah, most of the places I worked, and he says most I see arrive at 8:45 and gone by 3:30. Less lunch, that's close to 30 hours. Now, I mean, I'm not working in a school anymore and my hours are longer, but when I was back in school, I was in there by 10 past 8 in the morning and mostly didn't get out till after 5, and that still left all the other stuff you do at home. So he's now saying,
John, I'm laughing out here to myself that, yeah. As much as I'm one of no doubt many people who sneak a peek at Heedy Bob's tweets, but I think the number one rule of being an educator involved in education in Scotland is never ever respond to a Heedy Bob tweet.
Just his last one, he said, I'd like to see logging of hours to justify the claims. Well, I just go trusting people, actually, you know, and watching them. And the school I was in before I was doing my current job, certainly I was probably one of the first in, but I certainly wasn't the last out, and I was doing well over 35 hours a week, so I reckon everybody else was too. I've now wound up. Well done, Eddie.
You're being real then, John.
Yeah, it's
there you go.
I guess the only job I know where you can show up half an hour early for your shift and folk look at you and go, you're late in this morning. I mean, it's just Heedy Bob's actually ticked off at the moment. I don't know if you have spotted on Twitter, there is a Heedy Bob bot.
I haven't seen that though.
Which goes to retweet him, and he's quite upset about it. There was a bit of speculation in the Teachy, well, maybe even after the Teachy at Teachy Island.
No names, Ian.
Oh no, no names about the true identity of Heedy Bob. And I had happened to mention on Twitter that that was the case, and he came right back at me saying, never mind that, who's responsible for the Heedy Bob bot? I'd like to give their arse a
good. Just before we finish up, because I know that
we're going to hear a horrible sound.
Whatever free service that John's got, it's going to end up crackling all our mics in a moment. And the live stream will sound distorted. I suppose just to finish up, and for anybody listening in who's already tired of sort of technology references and such like, but you know, we'll be moving on to looking at outdoor learning next week with Juliet Robertson, and I'll just give a few details of that in a moment. But John and I have spoken in recent times about looking towards what might be organised by teachers and others around next year's Scottish Learning Festival. If something's arranged, Teach Me or Teach Me Style, Have you got any thoughts about what might work or what might be different, or what works at the moment that we should keep? I think John and I had some feelings that maybe there could be a couple of events that we might be involved in running something a little bit different to the Teach Meet style of recent years. Not being critical, but just thinking that it might be nice to possibly return to the style of the early days, if that's not a bit too nostalgic and irrelevant to those people who come to Teach Meets these days.
Well, me and John were talking about similar kind of things the other week when we were talking to
T6. Here we go. We're just getting a huge fuzz now. I'm going to hang up. We've done our hour. I think we'll come back, Ian, to Teach Meet Live.
Sorry.